everybody. Welcome to the Used Up Pens podcast. I'm your host, Tristan. Before we get started, I want to plug a couple things. We have a brand new Patreon, so make sure you go to Patreon and check out Drawings by Trent. We are also going on tour this summer. Trent's hitting the road. We're going to lots of places, so make sure you go to drawingsbytrent.com and check out our tour dates there. Mm-hmm. As I said, I'm your host, Tristan. I have my parents here with me, per usual.
Hey.
Oh, you didn't introduce us separately. Hello.
Nope. You're a pair. And we have special guests on today. We have Christine and Abby. You may have seen them on Love on the Spectrum on Netflix, which we're big fans of. So say hello, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for having us, guys.
We love you.
Thank you guys so much for having me on the call today.
Yeah.
You're welcome. And we were so excited that you were going to be on Love on the Spectrum because we already followed your hat TikTok, Hats by Abby TikTok. So you were already famous to us before we saw you on Love on the Spectrum.
Yeah, we had started the TikTok before the show aired, just kind of, by the way, on the show, you don't even know if you're going to really make the final cut. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing about it that feels kind of difficult because, you know, if the story doesn't come together because there's no script, then they don't use you. And they tell you at the beginning, you may or may not be in this. So it's kind of a gamble, but you do put a little bit of time into it. They come in your house and they follow you around and they get to know you. So that part's a little strange, but she was doing TikTok beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of worked out.
Yeah.
I know
we were just talking about, and Tristan said, "Hey, Abby's going to be on Love on the Spectrum." When we saw the commercial for it. So very exciting for you guys.
We shot the first season of Love on the Spectrum. We were shot and then we did the TikTok, but it doesn't air for 1 year.
Oh, right.
Oh, wow.
I didn't realize it was that delayed.
Yeah. It's a year, just about a year. Mm.
So David and Abby have been dating longer than people realize.
How long is it going to be? 3 years.
Wow. That's exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Do you have anything special planned for your 3 years together?
Might go to Atlantis, Bahamas, because that was his childhood vacation when he was growing up.
Oh, very cool. Did he like it?
I'm pretty sure he loved it.
Good.
It seems great. Like David has taken some really cool vacations in his life.
He actually has. His family's big travelers. Mm-hmm. So, as you all saw on the first date of Love on the Spectrum, the first thing they had, the love of animals, specifically lions.
Yeah.
And he said, the miracle is he had said, you know, I've been to Africa. Abby told everybody that I couldn't afford.
Right. For time. Hey, this is real life. We can't afford it either.
Yeah, we feel that.
The interesting thing about Abby, if I may say, girl, is that she just believed she was going to go. I'm going to go one day. I'm going to go to Africa. I can't wait till I go on safari. You know, so many of us don't do that.
Yeah. Right.
We just don't see it as it is happening. And she does.
Huh. Yeah. Well, and it did, I guess.
Well, it's even really more crazy because then the trip happened. But 6 months before the trip even happened to Africa, there's a TikTok of Abby in the pool. I wasn't there. It's cousin Mary, her helper, was there. She was in the pool and a ladybug landed on her hand. And Mary said, make a wish. And Abby said, closed her eyes and said, I look forward to going on an African safari.
Huh.
Hmm.
She didn't say, I wish.
Yeah.
She said, I look forward to going, which I love that.
And my wish came true.
Yeah.
It did. We saw it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yep.
Yeah. That's so cool. That makes me think of your singing, Abby. So I know that you are a singer and you love to sing and you've written a few songs about autism. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And I see that there's a new song called Categories.
Yes, there is. It's about how my mind works and how I put things I like together and things I don't like in another section.
Okay.
Wow. A category.
Yeah, very cool. Where can people find your music?
On YouTube or check it out on Spotify.
Okay, you're on Spotify.
Sweet. We actually did a real music video and we did not shoot this on an iPhone like we have in the past. And we're editing it. So it's going to actually, we're going to do a little YouTube, like, you know, drop party. And
it should be
up in a couple of weeks, actually. We really put some time and energy into it because I love that these stories, I think, will resonate with autistic or neurodiverse people, different types of thinkers, and Temple Grandin, actually, who I'm a fan of, and I just had the pleasure of speaking with at Chico State University. She talked about how she thinks in categories, visual categories, and how autistic people will, like, legalistically put things in logical places.
Like, for example, my boyfriend David has something called synesthesia. He sees colors as numbers or numbers as colors.
Yeah.
Oh, heard of that.
He thinks in patterns, right. And so this Abby came to me and I said, what do you want your next song to be? And she said, I want to talk about how I think in categories. And so that's how we kind of came up with it and did it. And a friend of ours is a part-time songwriter, so they just did it together.
That's so cool. I love it.
And I'm in the editing room because I got to direct it.
Oh, wow.
My old life was the creative life. And so I have a little bit of experience in directing. And so what a great thing to take autism, her love of singing, and my former life in the arts and bring it all together.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I bet that was so much fun. Abby, did you have a good time?
Yes, I did.
Very cool. And talking about that David sees colors as numbers, what is that called again, Abby?
Synesthesia.
I wonder if Trent does that.
Yeah.
I don't know. He'll put numbers on his drawings.
We
can't figure out what the numbers mean.
Oh, I wonder if it is because it's color related. So why don't you tell us? Because this is what I love. She memorized his sequential color number patterns, even though she doesn't do it.
That's so cool.
She memorized it for him. So tell us, how does it work out? David's.
He sees numbers as colors.
What are them? Tell us what it is.
It's where you, it's how he understands. He sees things like number one is gold. And it used to be the color black, but he changed it to gold.
So give us the numbers and the colors.
One gold, two red, three yellow, four blue, five green, six purple, seven white, eight brown, nine pink, 10 gray, 11 orange, 12 crimson.
Wow.
Wow.
Abby, is it easy for you to memorize things?
And zero black. It never used to have a color, but now it does.
Okay.
That is cool. Is it easy for you to memorize things like that, Abby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so easy. So this is one of my favorite Abby stories. We were sitting in an Airbnb with her brother, Ben, and it was Ben's birthday. So I wanted to do something special. We all had this Airbnb and we were just sitting at the dinner table for the birthday dinner. And Abby started saying the birds from your online course. Give us some of the names of those birds.
Cuckoo, Abyssinian ground hornbill, umbrella bird, vulturine guinea fowl, Zanzibar Bischoff.
She just hoopoo.
Did I say hoopoo?
You did.
Yeah.
Jabiru, Kagu, Marvelous Spatial Tail.
It's so
cool.
Rosie at the Spoonbill. Secretary Takai.
So she just started naming all these birds, and my son,
yellow-billed kingfisher,
got laughing.
Xanthus merlet.
Like, she sounded like a scientist.
Owl.
And she's not wrong. These are on the list.
Yeah.
Golden pheasant.
I can't even pronounce them.
I bet Trent doesn't even know all of those.
Probably not.
I don't know.
They're not in the African books,
right? That's fascinating.
That's so cool, Abby. What a cool talent.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay. We've talked a little bit about David. Abby, can you tell us a few things about how it feels to have a boyfriend?
It feels amazing to have a boyfriend.
Yeah.
When I first met David, he understands the way my mind works. And whenever I hear a certain sound I don't like, David says, covers my ears and helps me ignore it.
Oh, how nice. Oh, that's cool.
So he knows specific things about you too.
Yes, he does.
Very cool.
He actually has been quite a patient kind of protector and leader. He really understands her neurodifference. And because of that, he can jump in and help her. Abby, you think in old memories. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think in old memories, like, for example.
You go to old memories.
I go to old memories and stay in the moment.
Instead of saying,
I feel this or I feel that.
She thinks of a time or a place when she felt that.
And I would say, whenever I'd see the health group or sunrise, I'd go, that's the clubhouse.
They don't know what the help group or Sunrise is. Uh-uh.
Sunrise is a place for nonverbal kids, and Clubhouse was a program I used to go to when I was 4 and 5.
So those were two programs, one that she went to that caused her massive anxiety at the time she went. She didn't have enough language to tell me what she was feeling. So I truly didn't know. One program in particular was called the Clubhouse. And a lot of times these programs will keep enrollment up and they'll say, oh, everything's great. She's doing great. But that might not have been the best fit because you're paying.
Yeah. I mean, those kids would have meltdowns.
They did. And so it caused her a lot of anxiety at the time. I didn't know it. So once I started sensing that it wasn't right, I obviously pulled her out right away. But she was there for a couple months. And that caused such anxiety. And it's almost like a haunting memory that is so strong that it stays in her. And she'll say, that's the Clubhouse, instead of saying,
and we need to change those memories.
I'm anxious. Well, we're not. What we do with the memories is, my strategy was to create a picture of the Clubhouse and put the feeling words underneath it.
Called a visual dictionary.
That's what I just made up the term, visual dictionary. So I took her memories, not to change her memories, because those are her memories.
Right.
But to have them and just translate. Could she add that other word in so she could be understood? That's kind of what I was, that was the goal anyways. And I think she did a great job.
Wow. And I'd say, for example, whenever I felt frustrated, I'd go, I'm a mermaid.
What does that mean?
Mermaids felt isolated and alone, and mermaids couldn't talk. And that's how I felt.
Yeah. A big part of Abby's story is the Ariel story. Why don't you tell us how that works in your mind?
When I first saw the story of Ariel, I really understood her, because I wanted to be with the typical kids and she wanted to be with the humans. Mm. And when she finally became human, she couldn't talk. That's how I felt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And her father wouldn't let her be with the people. He said no.
Huh. We've wondered about that kind of thing a lot with Trent, because he doesn't seem to want to be with other people, you know, like, because of his struggles with language and stuff, he doesn't. Like, so we felt kind of good about that, because we know what a struggle that is when your kid wants to be included and be a part of what's going on, and because of some issue isn't able to, and we're kind of thankful Trent doesn't seem to want to do that.
Well, and right. like Abby, he often becomes really frustrated with other students who might get loud or have meltdowns and things. That gives him intense anxiety also.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the reason why we took him out of his day program, was that he just really didn't enjoy being there. With people who could melt down and people who were loud and things.
We actually had a similar thing. She was doing a day program after her vocational school. And the problem is how do you have this group, and there's different pockets within the group, but there's not enough staff to separate them. Mm-hmm. Then you have anxiety related to it. So I would really try to help them. And there would be these two particular individuals that were causing the anxiety, and they say, you have to separate them. And they're like, well, we can't do that. That's not politically correct, if you will.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, then I guess we'll quit the program, because
what are you talking about?
It's not helpful. Just different programs.
Yeah.
And how sometimes the matching isn't thoroughly working. Yeah. So that's definitely an issue, I think, that makes it very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. So
what else do you have, Tristan?
Oh, way to put me on the spot there, buddy. Whoa. I was just listening. Oh, man. You've talked a little bit about your autism, but can you talk to us a little bit about what your autism was like when you were younger?
When I was younger, I had more autism and a lot less language when I was younger. Mm. I had no friends. I went to an autism school. I had 20 years of speech therapy and 15 years of occupational therapy to get where I am today.
Yeah. Wow. A lot of hard work. That's very cool.
Do you still have some of those therapies?
I'm even in a therapy right now about learning how to join conversations, interview skills, just like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good.
You're so doing a great job. A lot of people don't realize that Abby's still in therapy right now. And I
don't want to be.
Well, she wishes that she was typical and she didn't have to work hard. I think Abby's if I could say, I mean, your most frustrating thing is getting the words out.
I wish I had Asperger's, but was still on the spectrum.
Yeah. So that other sort of heated political thing, because you can't say Asperger's anymore, but those people in that condition didn't go away. Right. I actually work in the cancer field for my day job. And
you mean the Farrah Fawcett Foundation?
Yes. And we have scientists that we deal with. I was just at a scientific summit talking about this, that you can't say Asperger's. And the main scientist from MD Anderson laughed and she said, half my team is Asperger's.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're changing immunotherapy. I mean, these guys, and if you listen to them, which I've been blessed to listen to, the amount of sort of smarts is mind blowing. And many of them are Asperger's, but you can't say that anymore.
Right.
So they're clumped in with autism. And then you go, well, how do you help everybody if you can't address what this is? You're not allowed to say that this has these skill sets. These people have this skill set, but we're not allowed to acknowledge the skill set because it's not acknowledged by the DSM-5 anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, not to get too far off the question of Abby when you were younger, but remember how you say you used to copy typical kids?
I used to copy typical kids massively. When a typical kid would take a nap, I would take a nap. When a typical kid would sneeze, I would sneeze. When a typical kid would eat, I would pretend to eat because I was trying to be like them. Mm-hmm. And I used to call typical kids mermaids.
Because?
Because they mermaids represented jealousy.
Mm. And you felt
like a mermaid, and I wanted... The reason why I called typical people merp people is because I didn't want them to talk
like you.
Yeah.
So it was all about fitting in for her. She had enough awareness of what was happening to want to be able to do. But I would say if you could imagine you have an autistic child and they're doing a behavior like copying or resentful, there's a trigger. There's an antecedent.
And it might have made them uncomfortable.
It did. There's an antecedent to that behavior. And in Abby's case, now she's able to express it. But at the time she couldn't. And I just couldn't figure out why she was doing this. And it was a bit uncomfortable. You know, it made kids uncomfortable when you did that.
Yeah. And I also say that typical kids, something very inappropriate about.
Everybody knows Trent is a fantastic artist, but did you know that he has a store full of all kinds of cool stuff featuring his art? Things like short sleeve t-shirts,
long sleeve t-shirts, sweatshirts,
and hoodies, along with coloring books. Entrance illustrated book, Drawn to Be You. Insulated tumblers, three different styles.
Insulated wine tumblers, two different colors.
And a camper mug in three different colors.
With the moose kissing a goose.
During the year, we have special gift boxes. We've got surprise box for birthday or special occasion. And several limited edition coloring books every year.
Drawings by Trent is a business that is providing for Trent's future. The business is also helping Trent's art and message reach people all over the world. So check it out at drawingsbytrent.com. That's drawingsbytrent.com.
Yes, I definitely agree with. Yes, that's why I keep asking you. I know you need a break.
Thanks, thank you, Abby.
That's okay. Come back whenever you feel like it. So in our therapy, we're working on this.
Yeah.
This is probably the hardest skill for her, is to sit and listen, understand the question. We're training her to say, or teaching her to say, or encouraging her to say, I don't understand the question.
Yeah.
Rather than just start non sequiturs and things coming in like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't understand the level or the place that Abby's at, because I never show her struggling on TikTok. I try to show educational moments where we're resolving something, we're working together, or we're working through a moment. Her TikTok is just the beautiful outlook she has on life, her gleeful innocence and fun. Mm-hmm. But they don't see the struggle because it's not right for me to show that. Right. And that's not what it's about. And I wouldn't want someone showing me struggling. And so we don't show that part. But the downside is then people judge and make assumptions that, you know, Abby should be driving a car, living on her own, and traveling Europe with a backpack by herself. Like, people just assume certain things that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't tell you how proud I am of how far she's come. As you can hear, since the time she was, 4 and 5 years old, she had such resentments about this condition. That's why it pains me when people jokingly say I'm autistic, which I'm seeing all over TikTok. Mm-hmm. Someone's video this morning of three young people laughing and joking about, autism is so in right now. And I think she was joking, she wasn't joking because she's not wrong. Right. It's like somehow socially like this cool, quirky thing about you, which actually discredits all of the people who truly are neurodiverse and didn't get diagnosed. Well, there is a population of people that should have had, I think, intervention services, understanding that were socially awkward or had sensory issues, like maybe just sensory integration or just auditory, that made them go into a different pocket but remain misunderstood. I would say those people might be neurodiverse, but they're not autistic. I don't know why we can't say they're two different things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's good insight. I think just because of the position on social media that you both are on, Christine, can you talk a little bit about if you had TikTok before, or like, I guess at the very beginning of Love on the Spectrum, how your content has kind of changed now and what people like go to you for, or, I mean, you can even talk about like comments you get or anything like that, but just about your social media experience, because I think both of you are going to have a lot in common in this circle.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't jump on social media to do this. Do you know why I'm on TikTok? Here it is. Go to my very first video. Somebody complained about Abby pouring herself a glass of wine at age 24. And complained, and they got us a community violation, and they just assumed she was underage when she was 24. No one asked us. Yeah. No one said anything. So the account was banned for 2 weeks. Mm. It never happened before. And I had been posting about how Abby's making hats and saving money to go on a cruise. Mm-hmm. Not really a cruise. It's like a booze cruise. But nonetheless, to Abby, it was a cruise.
Yeah.
It was 3 days. To Ensenada, Mexico. It's like a long weekend beer fest. It's not glamorous, but I've never been on a cruise. This was like in 2022, I think. Anyways, so we went and she paid her way with the hat money. Uh-huh. Now, the reason I did that was for her to connect with money and working and work ethic and purpose. I didn't do it because I was trying to make her pay. It was just that she understood that she earned enough hat money to do it.
Yeah.
Anyways, so the night before the big trip that everyone is tearfully cheering us on, I shut the page down.
Oh my goodness.
And I literally was just in shock because it was like the height of our story and Abby's success because she had won this. So I took over my username 157628, which was me. I never posted a video, didn't want to. And I thought I owed it to her to continue telling her story. So my account, we started posting that trip. And by the end of that 2 weeks, I had a couple hundred thousand followers. And I felt it was the universe saying, you have a story to tell. You should just go for it. So I'm very clear. Go on my TikTok. You'll see it. Abby's page is back. Go follow Abby for the best, most funnest, you know, stuff in the world. I'll stick around for boring educational stuff. I pretty much tell you what it is. And so that was the beginning of it. Somebody asked me about a certain therapy. I'm answering everything as honestly as I can. I was using the hashtag everyday autism at the time because I thought that meant the kind of autism that's the typical impairment that you see in the world, because everyone in our world of autism were similar to Abby. They had unusual vocal patterns, expressive language troubles. Everyone had a major sensory things, very jumpy, unaware of spatial relations. I mean, everybody that's in our world, the 20 plus individuals that I would say I know well enough, I've watched them grow up, have similar to Abby. There's obviously something different about them from the minute you meet them. And all of them struggle with language. So that was kind of like the profile. So soon I was just attacked and bullied. And to my great disappointment and surprise, I'd say 80% of them were newly diagnosed adults with autism. I was shocked and sickened, quite frankly, that the very people that were supposedly in the same realm were the meanest, nastiest, cruelest individuals. Because they all claim that we autistics this and we autistics that. And I thought, oh my God, it's a political movement. That's honestly what my first take was. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that this was brewing in our culture, in our society, that there was a disgruntled group of young people who were claiming that autism was their plight. And this is why they're also angry at the world about a lot of things. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not something going on which makes them neurologically different, mm-hmm. bitter and angry. But since that time, I've had the pleasure of meeting many neurodiverse adults that do not call themselves autistic. And they're the nicest, kindest people I've met. And so I'm trying to have a voice for them too now. I hate to say the real neurodiverse people, but people who have struggled with processing differences, whether it was sensory or auditory, or perhaps some neurology, but perfect speech. Mm-hmm. Those people are out there and they're real. But this other group of people, the angry bullies that say the most vile things, and they say they're autistic. And I was like, I didn't know autistic meant you were also an asshole.
Right.
Sorry, I said it. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, the people that I know that I have met outside of Abby's world are lovely, sweet, kind people. And I'm trying to actually on my YouTube, I'm going to be really sitting down and having dinner with these people and talking about their skill sets, what their struggles were, so that in the workplace for people that are working that maybe aren't autistic or it's not obvious, maybe there's more compassion. Your coworker could be neurodiverse and there's a list of do's and don'ts or some things for the other person that may never have encountered this to know, you know, how they can be more helpful to that person. But I'm telling you, it's just truly turning into a slight war zone in the autism world. I feel very sad about it. I get messages every day from people in different parts of the country and the world just saying thank you, because I'm only sharing some of the amazing strategies that were taught to me. Mm-hmm. Observations and strategies in for people that don't have resources. They don't have, you know, maybe a full diagnosis in their country because they just, you know what I mean? Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I feel like sharing of information. And when Abby was little, all I ever did was try to find people who had similar issues to Abby so I could see what they did. Mm-hmm. So I'm only regurgitating the information that I was blessed to acquire along the journey, really. I'm not trying to say I'm right or I'm wrong, but for anyone to come to me and act like they think they know more about Abby's neurological functioning than I do is absurd. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show you the sort of ego-driven individuals out there thinking that they have a right to say Abby does this, Abby can do this or that, and they have never met her, never spoken to her, never talked to her.
We've experienced obviously a lot of that. You know, we very similarly, we never set out to have a huge social media following. We didn't know what we were doing. We were just trying to do the best we could for Trent. And you know, we've said lately we've said if Trent were neurotypical, he would probably be an artist, and this is probably what he would do. And so we're just trying to help him do what we think he would do if he had that skill set or ability. Trying to step in and be a voice for him. But because you're on social media, there are so many more people that you're introduced to. And unlike you, we knew very few people when Trent was young, very, very few, if any, who were as severe as he was.
Right.
We just didn't have really those relationships or those people around us.
Yeah.
So
do you want to sit down?
I got this because I'm cold.
Okay. Oh.
That's a beautiful jacket.
Yeah.
So I did see a video actually when I first started seeing Trent and fascinated with his skill set. But that one video where dad has to defend the business and the drawings and somebody accusing of the exploitation. And I'm thinking, I'm here in California screaming through the airwaves. What's their problem? Because I'm so in awe of what you've created on so many levels, that he has a purpose. He has a place. Yeah. And watching, because as a parent of someone on the spectrum, watching his visual, you know, kind of mode of how he draws, Ross, I've noticed how he'll start just with that one line.
Yep.
That the neurology that must be going on is something I could never tap into.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's just so great on so many levels. And whatever comes to you is a blessing and deserved and fabulous.
You get a blessing in disguise?
Nope. Just, I was using it just as a real, in the real way, not an idiom. So anyway, so I just remember seeing that, and I just, it made me think of like, wow, yeah, these nasty people out there who throw these things around, but you know, no one is exempt from this for any category on social media, specifically TikTok. You know, I saw a beautiful woman trying to lose weight. She was doing a whole like health thing, and she said, "I'm finally going to do this." She had a lot of weight to lose. Mm-hmm.
Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about a video I saw, and I'm talking about what it's like to be on TikTok for me.
Yes.
When the haters come up.
I need another break.
You can have a break. Go ahead.
Is this being seen on TV?
Nope. No, luckily.
Right. It's okay.
But anyway, this woman, though, there were people writing comments like, "You're so fat, you should just die. You're so disgusting. How did you let yourself get like this?" And the fact that those people could even ever write something like that, one, shows you why our world is so messed up. Mm-hmm. And two is that, you know, that person's going to be living in that hateful, angry place their whole life, most likely. Mm-hmm. Cause to write that and what they're missing in life. Cause if you can get on the happy train, life is a whole lot better.
Right.
For everybody.
How old is Abby?
25.
Yeah, so she and Trent are closer to the same age. I don't know about you, but we didn't know people when he was growing up who had autism. We didn't have resources of people telling us we've been there at all. So one of the coolest things about the social media that we've seen is that people have said, you know, you are a glimpse into the window of my child as an adult, you know, and they feel so much hope that they're like, my 10-year-old's nonverbal and I can see how he can have a good life. He can, you know, so just that positivity and people asking us questions about what did you do about this? What did you do about that? You know, I'm so happy to be there for them because nobody was there for us.
Yeah.
It's such a
great point. That community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We get people just, I mean, hurt people. And then a lot of people on social media just troll. I mean, they're just trying to get a rise out of you. So we try to just ignore a lot of that. But we also, you know, part of what we want to do through Drawings by Trent is educate people on the positive impact that individuals, not just with autism, but with any kind of challenge can have on the world around them. But the other thing is we kind of like internally, we kind of just joke and laugh because people sometimes will act like, you know, we're forcing Trent to draw or be on social media all the time. And we're like, okay, we both, Andrea and I both work other jobs outside the home. Then we come home and we work on Drawings by Trent stuff and we're doing things and he, you know, spends maybe, I don't remember what we estimate, 7 minutes a day, maybe on working on the business or being on camera or something. It's a tiny little fraction of time, especially compared to all the hours that all the rest of us work.
And he has the option to say no. He will say no.
Yeah. He'll say no.
I mean, people now I sort of have to say, are you okay to TikTok? Because people assume either she's unaware that I'm asking her a question, and Abby's pretty aware of what's going on. Plus, she's pretty opinionated. She gets up and walks away. I'm taking a break. I'm this, I'm that. Mm-hmm. And now I have to sort of censor that as if she doesn't know, like she's blind. She doesn't know that we're doing TikTok right now. We've been doing this for a long time. And the other thing is that Abby was always in the arts in programs. I had her in a program for individuals with autism since the time she was about 15. And those programs helped as a therapy of the arts, singing and acting and on camera. On camera was great because when she was 15 and they did these little scenes, she could look at herself and actually see what her facial expressions were doing, what her reactions were. And it brought something to her awareness that she was otherwise not really aware of. It's like reciprocal thinking. For me, in Abby's world, it's sort of from the inside out is the projection that the person on the spectrum, some may not be able to sort of see how they're impacting a situation. That reciprocal understanding doesn't come instinctually. Like, oh, I hope I didn't hurt that person's feelings, or, oh, I wonder if I say this, this person's going to feel that. That component isn't genetically in Abby's thinking. So we've taught her to be more aware of it. But she's been on camera for just forever. And I used to do videos and send them to my son, Ben, her brother, that were funny things that she did. She always made us laugh. She always had a great sense of humor. So we would do that. And we've always played around with that. Always tried to include fun in our daily lives. Do you know?
somebody messaged yesterday or a couple days ago, somebody direct messaged and said, you need to ask Trent if he wants to be on camera. And I just deleted the comment. I mean, or the thing. But, like, number one, we're his parents. Would we not ask that already? Number two, he's on camera. Like, if people don't understand, if Trent didn't want to draw or he didn't want to do anything, we could not make him. Like, he's a big,
same here,
strong
100%
guy.
But it's that's what I meant about the voice of my haters. I'll go in and check out a profile, and I see they're unhappy people, they're angry people, they're anti-society, they're anti-establishment. But what makes me the most sad is they have a big victim mentality. They are victims of their parents, the world. There's a certain profile that's, I mean, this is very generalizing. I get it. Like I said, I've met a million fabulous neurodiverse people who are functioning, who just would never say that stuff. Right. They will tell me their story from a very sweet, loving understanding. This is why I suffer. Every decision I make, I can't do this. I get anxiety. The world is so overwhelming. So I get that profile. But these other people, that's why it feels almost like a political movement. You know, and you can't say certain therapies, you know, and then those are the same people that say we autistics, like it's a movement. And anyone that's really in this knows, I don't say we autistics. That's why my hashtag is Abby's Autism. I don't use everyday autism, because that term has been hijacked by people that I have nothing in common with. When I say I mean the application of helping someone with autism, there's zero crossover. Now, all of this in general, what I'm saying, and my new passion seems to be that the DSM-5 was changed in 2013. Level playing field, everyone's autistic. So you can't have PDD. PDD, pervasive developmental disorder, would be neurodiverse. And wouldn't it be great if we could identify neurodiverse individuals in elementary school, so they could get supportive services right in elementary school? Parents wouldn't have to fight for a diagnosis, wouldn't have to go to some special thing, a company, and get on a waiting list for a year. You could do services and adjust the academics right in school. But no, we don't have PDD, they're all autistic. And then our high intelligence Asperger population, I've had the pleasure of knowing many Asperger people whose intelligence blows me away, who have decent social skills, but the subtleties of human communication aren't there. Do you know, subject perseveration, stuff like this. And, not knowing when to end a conversation or those kinds of things. But these are our scientists, possibly scientists, engineers, you know, the inventors of things. Wouldn't it be great to identify them in elementary school to give them maybe some support services to identify this? But if everyone's just autistic, it makes it a chaotic, wild stadium of a bunch of people who are unhappy, and some can't talk and some are just angry, and it's a big mess. So I think we have not autistic 1, 2, 3, like that system, by the way, we didn't even hear about that till a couple of years ago. What's that? You 1, 2, or 3? I'm like, what's that? No one's ever said that to me. Is that some official thing? I don't know if some people made that up. You know, level 1 light support needs. What does that even mean? It's so vague. for such a serious diagnosis. Mm-hmm. We don't do it in the cancer world. We don't do it in mental illness. We don't say everyone's mental ill. Are you 1, 2, or 3? We have new diagnoses for mental illness on a daily basis. Hmm. The different, you know, occupational defiance disorder. We have all these things, but in the autism world, in the neurological world, we're not even really acknowledging sensory processing disorder as its own real condition. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why they're all clumped in with autism, so they can get services. So then I'm like, oh, it's about money. Right. School district doesn't want to pay for it. Insurance companies don't want to pay for it. So it's like, what we're not doing is helping people that need help. Mm-hmm. We're having inner fighting and bullying to the point of I've wanted to shut my page down many times, and Abby's, because it's just not worth it. What do I care? My kid's an inspiration. She's going to be okay. I don't care about your kid, but I don't work that way. Mm-hmm. I do care about your kid because I've lived this. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that if I can continue to have autism advocates, especially the neurodiverse community, write to the American Psychiatric Association and say, you've got to fix the DSM-5. This manual is lazy, sloppily written. And I've never read it, so I should not say that. But this manual is not diagnosing people correctly. You should be able to say this autism, you know, sensory processing, auditory processing as separate things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're autistic. And by the way, I grew up with a brother who had sensory processing disorder. We now know it. I lived with it. I know what the behaviors were. I watched it. I lived with it. My brother is not autistic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, today I'm sure he would be clumped in with that population, but mm-hmm. I don't know how or why it became kind of a funny, cute diagnosis where people kind of laugh at it. Or, you know, it's this angry mob mentality, because the bullying is the evidence I have that there is a big problem. Mm-hmm. If there was no bullying, I wouldn't be saying this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And the thing that we've gotten regarding that was we've just had a few comments, not a lot, but we had a few people say, I'm autistic too. I know what Trent is thinking and he doesn't like that. They just put themselves in his shoes like they're the same. Yeah. And I want to write back and say, just the fact that you can tell me that tells me you're nothing like Trent.
Yeah.
Because
that's the thing. I mean, that's it. That's the person that is willing to say that they know what Trent is thinking is the person that's part of the problem mm-hmm. and part of the misinformation. There is no we in autism. There is no we, not even for Abby.
What is that thing we say all the time? There's that quote. If you
it's a quote met, by Dr. Stephen Shore.
Yeah. If you've met one person with autism, you met one person with autism. I'm like, correct. Where did that go? Because now that's almost not the case. It's like,
I like that
in Love on the Spectrum because Danny and Abby and Dave, like they're, and James, we follow James on TikTok. Man, he can talk. like everybody is different and you can see that. I like that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because even when it comes to Love on the Spectrum, the first season of Love on the Spectrum Australia had not aired yet at the time we were speaking with the production team. They found Abby in her autism acting music class that she was in, and they had called us during COVID. Anyways, a bunch of Zoom calls later, they said, you know, we want to do this thing. And I didn't know what it was. We didn't know what it was. It just was some guy shooting a documentary. That's all we knew at the time.
Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't have done it if I had known that it was going to be a big show because of the pressure that would have been on Abby to verbally exchange, to be socially on and all this sort of stuff. But at the time, we had maybe one taping one day where they had come by and he said, oh, our show in Australia just aired. You should watch it. So I sat down, I watched season one of Australia and I said, laughed, I cried. It was beautiful. I loved it. And then I said, Abby's not right for this show. This show should be called Asperger's in Love. Mm-hmm. Because Shanae and Jimmy were traveling Europe on their own.
Yeah.
You've got Michael who could run a company. Uh-huh. He's drives a car, has a job. He's fabulous. I adore him. I love the cast, but they were nothing like Abby. Mm-hmm. They were all very independent, high functioning people in that way. And I said, this would be wrong of me to put Abby in something that's so over her head. Mm-hmm. And that is what I said to the director. The show should be called Asperger's of, and there was also some people questioning their sexuality in season one. And I was like, is this a show about autism and sexuality? Or is this just a show about people trying to meet somebody? Cause what's the show about? Cause if it's about sexuality, then it's not right for us. That's a high concept where we're not there, you know? And he clarified beautifully and said two things. He said, this is a show where we just tell people stories. And if that's your story, that's your story. Simple answer, but a good answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he said, we want to show more diversity of the spectrum. We want to show more people because to me, all the people in season one were so high functioning that it was just quirkiness about them. I mean, not to disrespect their real challenges, but the presentation of it, the mastery of language for them was obvious. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have that. And that was the big question. Mm-hmm. But the way Keon had explained it to me, wanting that more diversity, then I said, because I would always say, I wish people could see how much we struggle with language, how much we struggle to integrate. Me helping Abby having to, you know, blend in, figure out her own path. So at that point is when I said, okay, let's give it a go. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, they were great. A lot of people criticize Love on the Spectrum with the music and it's not really fair. And I'm like, first of all, Danny was Abby's teacher.
Really?
Yes.
How cool.
I've known Danny for years. We don't know any of the other cast members, but Danny was kind of a little mini celebrity in Los Angeles because she was a very pretty, articulate woman on the spectrum who had an animation company. She was always kind of a little celebrity around here. And so Danny Bowman, everyone kind of knew Danny as I did. So no surprise she was on the show. After we were done taping, we found out she was one of the other stories, but Abby's in a program called Spectrum Laboratory, which was started by two guys who used to work for Elaine Hall at the Miracle Project. Miracle Project was won an Emmy. It was called Autism the Musical, 2005, maybe, about a woman who took this great project on. They did a documentary and won an Emmy. It's great. Anyways, they started doing these programs in person for people on the spectrum. Those two guys went off and did a company called Spectrum Laboratory. And it was like an on-camera classes, voiceover class, animation class. So Danny taught the animation class there and still does, I believe.
Wow.
I could be wrong about that. But so you see the different levels. Danny's going for her PhD right now, I believe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you see there's completely different.
Right.
We're all vocational. Always have been vocational. So even within that shift, and even for me to see the different qualities David has, that help Abby are remarkable. A lot of people don't realize David works at the Beverly Hills Courthouse. He has to help her and aid. And he really understands Abby's mind. So he is able to help and jump in social situations when she may need help, which is so cool. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
And yeah, that's really neat. We didn't.
How neat is it that Abby is the only one who has the lasting relationship? I mean, she's still with the same guy she got with in the first season.
Yeah.
That's just really cool. I mean,
it was cool because when they came to me and they talked about,
say, I'm making a hat.
Oh, good.
Oh, cool.
Oh, can we see it? Can we see it, Abby?
Yeah.
Go get it.
I'm gonna have
to make some lunch. Okay. So, But yeah, so these different levels, and I like that. I mean, I absolutely fell in love with Connor and Tanner in this current season because the manifestation of their differences is so accessible, lovable, and adorable. And you see the humanity of that individual person, I think, without judgment.
Oh.
I love that color, Abby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, very nice.
Thank you.
So that was a part of, and so even just with, we're talking about these levels or the terminology used to describe the skill set. And I always say that the people that are hating me on TikTok have a skill set that has no overlap to anything that has to do with Abby. So why are we calling it the same thing? That would be like in mental illness, having a compulsive hoarder fighting with someone who's a manic depressive person about what they do to help themselves. Mm-hmm. There's no overlap. They're two different things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
When are we going to get language that's going to actually address the skill set? And also perhaps interventions at those younger ages that can be implemented in the school setting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So do you think that Abby's autism was represented well on the show?
That's a really good question. I'll be honest with you. This second season, I felt like Connor and Tanner had similar sort of social issues, but both of them, I think, went to college or went to some kind of program that was more academic and had jobs and things without helpers and aides, whereas we have to have the helper and the aide for focus and attention and that kind of thing. So, I mean, I've talked to the producers about it because I said, to me, when you see someone that has a bigger challenge and they're trying to solve a problem, the stakes are higher. The storytelling becomes more, you get more vested in the story. When it's easy and you have less of a problem, then I feel like it's not as high stakes for anybody, any story. And so I had just kept saying that, you know, when you find a kid who's struggling to connect or has a verbal thing or whatever, but has the desire to have relationship, of course you have to have that component, then you vest more in the story. Not on the show is someone in our world who is a speaking adult male who dated a nonverbal female. And I was so fascinated with their relationship. Like, they would do things together and he was so connected and would say, this is my girlfriend. And I would think to myself, wow, that is so interesting. What's that about? You know, they have a connection that's indescribable, you know, but it is TV. So it has to have some storytelling components where everybody's vested in it. So it's kind of like a concern, I would say. You know, but I do feel like it's been great because within the shooting of the show and my fears about Abby being into over her head, that very first interview, you know, they interviewed the kids in their bedrooms. And
Trent's brother-in-law, Easton, here to talk to you about our new Patreon. We have a ton of new stuff over on our Patreon, including two new podcasts. One of them being a Q&A. So if you have any questions for either Trent's parents or Trent's siblings, we do that once a month over on the Patreon. So it's a Patreon exclusive. You have to be on our $10 tier. As well as that podcast, you also get the Family and Friends podcast, where you get to hear a little bit more about Trent's friends and family, get to know a little bit more about their lives, more of an interview away from Trent and just about them as a person, get to hear about their hopes and hobbies and everything like that. Also, if you're a movie person, I host my own podcast called The Movie Moron, which Tristan, Andrea, and Trevor quite frequently are on. So if you're into movies, you can go check that out at The Movie Moron Podcast on all podcasting platforms. And that comes out every Tuesday. So go check out the Patreon at patreon.com/drawingsbytrent. And then go check out the Movie Moron Podcast on all podcasting platforms. Now back to the show.
Okay. So they sit in the bedroom of the individual who's going to be on the show to get to know them and tell their story. Mm-hmm. And they set up, you know, a camera and lights and they set it up. And this was the very first time, season one, first day. And they sit her in her room and they close the door. Now, I'm not in there. And I can hear yawning. I can hear, I'm bored. When is this going to be over? Like, can I take a break? She'd sat down for 2 minutes. Can I have a break?
Yeah.
So I could hear those things in the next room. And I just was like, what have I done?
Yeah.
This was not fair of me to suggest that she do this. You know, it was so hard because I didn't want to deny her the opportunity. I wanted to encourage her to step up. I know having a boyfriend was very important to her, but she couldn't really verbalize it. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a disaster. I mean, she yawned in the director's face and said, this is boring. Can I be done? And would give one word answers. And I was in the other room just going, this is terrible. Why did I do this? Why did I you know, set this up for her. Yeah. And they left. And a couple of days later, don't know why, Keon, the director, called up and he said, we're going to get some footage of Abby just around the house. Do you mind if we just come back? I was shocked. I literally thought that was a one day done deal. Mm-hmm. And they came back. And this time she did not have to sit in a chair in her room for an hour in the hot lights and whatever else. Mm-hmm. They just let Abby lead. Mm-hmm. And she was her normal self. Mm. And he turned to me an hour into it and said, is she always like this? I said, yes, she is kind of always like this. She's not like that. So she was able to lead and walk and show him things, mm-hmm. and kind of just be in Abby's world, but like let him into it. Mm-hmm. And that was the change and the shift. And then I said, wow, this is great. It was great. It was also great for growth. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a fine line as a parent, right? To not want to put your kid in a situation where it's going to be difficult for them.
Yeah.
But also want to encourage them to stretch and grow a little bit. We walk that line all the time.
And only the parent and immediate family knows what that is. Mm-hmm. I think some parents don't realize that there is this push. And there's also a pullback. I just spoke about this and I do feel like I've instinctually done that for Abby, but it's like not denying them an opportunity, maybe trying the opportunity with accommodations, mm-hmm. but then doing other tasks or things where you just pull back and see what they do without mm-hmm. any prompting or assistance or any of that stuff. One of the things I'm working on now is trying to get Abby to practice social language with other people, mm-hmm. not me. Mm-hmm. You know, my friends, friends of friends, we've got these therapists that are working on adaptive life skills with her. We'll set up Zoom calls. We'll do conversational language, practice interview skills, because just being able to do that is such an important part in life. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be integrating in, and we're still working on it, but that push pull, I've got so many things I think of when I look back on things I did. One of my biggest one was when she was in about eighth grade, she had a paralyzing fear of time, the clock, when things were going to happen. And if I was 1 minute late to pick her up at school, all hell broke loose. Mm-hmm. There was some trigger happening with my not being standing in the doorway of her school at exactly 3 o'clock. And I also knew I would be late at times. So somewhere around seventh or eighth grade, I called up the teacher and I said, I can't do this with her anymore. We've got to work through the sphere of time. And I said, I'm going to come late twice this week and three times next week. I will be 2 minutes late, 2 minutes late. And then the third day I'll be 5 minutes late. And we worked through this thing with accommodations in place for the fear and anxiety. We had a phone she could call me. We had treats, special privileges. She could go see the animals in this one room the kids weren't allowed in, you know, but we had it set up. And at the end of about 2 weeks, I could see that she was starting to be less anxious and starting to associate my being late with good things. Mm-hmm. Do you know what she was doing? I figured this out. She was associating my being late with that preschool program, the clubhouse I told you about earlier, mm-hmm. which she hated, which caused her massive anxiety, where kids really did tantrum. She was associating my being late with that program because that was an after-school program. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where that behavior was coming from. Mm-hmm. As long as it's not sensory, heat, light, you know, mm-hmm. triggers, yeah. mm-hmm. auditory input that's painful. As long as it's not that, I believe you have an opportunity for growth by taking something like that and addressing it in a safe environment. And that is what we did. Thank God. Because, I mean, when she was in elementary school, if I was 1 minute late, she would literally be on the floor, mm-hmm. and other parents would say we should be kicked out of that school because it was disturbing and distracting to other mm-hmm. children. And you know what? They weren't wrong, because she was. It's terrifying to see a kid on the floor screaming and tantruming. It's right. a hard thing. And yep. this was a typical elementary school. That's why we wound up getting going to an autism school and not going with mainstreaming. It just didn't work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a big difference for us too. When Trent,
You guys went to Heart Spring, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So was that for his primary education?
Yes.
Yeah.
We looked at Heart Spring when he was about 8 because he was very, very difficult, and there was just not a classroom for him in the public school. We went to visit, and at that time, when he was 8, we weren't really ready to accept that this is where he belongs. I mean, we saw big teenagers in helmets and gloves, and then being restrained in the hallways, and
it was terrifying for us.
It was scary, and although that was appropriate for Trent at that time because he was the same way.
Yeah.
It was just hard to accept. And there were people in the public school who said, let us give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kept trying in the public school. He was 11 when we finally said, okay, it's time. And we went to visit Heart Spring again. And we said, we acknowledge he belongs here.
And when we took him in, I remember the first day or whatever, they like every time in the public school before, if he would start to have an aggression or something, they looked at us like, what do we do? Or what are you going to do or whatever? And we go to Heart Spring and he starts to have an aggression, and the staff just immediately dealt with it. They never asked us to get involved. They never wanted us to get involved. They just handled it. We were just like,
we quit getting phone calls every day.
Oh yeah. Every day we'd get phone calls about how terrible it had been or how bad he'd been or whatever.
But not at Heart Spring.
Nope.
It was
a relief.
Such a relief.
Mm-hmm.
For you. Yeah.
Tristan actually works there.
Who does?
Tristan works there.
Works there, really?
Yeah.
The funny thing is it Kansas City it's in?
Wichita.
Mm-hmm. I remember, though, thinking when Abby was 11, 12, 13, that I had my moments of saying, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do something else. I need to. And there was a residential, 2-month program here.
Mm.
And, you had to apply, but you had to do all this pre-stuff. But of course, in the middle of my applying for this residential local program, they cut the Department of Mental Health here in the state of California, and they got rid of the program. And some kids were schizophrenic. Some kids had just behavior problems, different aggressions. Abby was on the verge of being aggressive enough at that point. 12, 13, 14 were some pretty difficult years.
Mm-hmm.
13, 14, 15, that chunk was not fun. There's a lot of anger, self-hatred, rage, jealousy. It was really, looking back on it, it's no short of a miracle to be here today where she doesn't show any of those behaviors. Yeah. And I always want to say to parents who are dealing with those issues, this too may pass.
Yeah.
And I would have put money on that it wouldn't have passed.
Right.
I lived in such fear for so long of what the placement was going to be or what my life was going to look like. And, 25 years later, who's the rock star?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, same for us. Same. I mean, when you're in the middle of that, you don't see an end.
Yeah.
You don't know what their future holds, and it's scary, but you just have to just one day at a time.
He's so, what's the word we use? He's so calm now.
Content.
No, that's not it. Something else. he just kind of goes with the flow now, and that
flexible.
Yeah. That never would have been, we never would have guessed that would be the way it was. And people look at him now and they're like, oh, it's so, and we're like, oh my goodness. Yeah. He tried to kill us so many times.
The tantrums still happen. He still has aggressive moments. But like you, we're not going to share that on social media. Yeah.
He doesn't want people talking about it. He doesn't want people knowing about it.
He doesn't like it that he does that, but he can't help it. Right. And so how disrespectful would it be for us to show that,
Right, right. Mm-hmm. No one wants to see that. That's why I don't show it either. So then people make assumptions about what your life must look like. And then tell you what Trent's thinking.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
More than you do.
Exactly.
It's crazy. But I remember during that period where it was so, and I'm a single mother, by the way. I have a son that's was 4 and Abby was 6 when I got divorced and my ex left and he moved out of state and for work purposes. And so there's not been a lot of contact really. And so there was that and the money. I had to make money. I had to work. So, I mean, when I look back on how I pieced it together, I so want to tell other young moms, single moms, or moms that are struggling, like, take it one day at a time. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. Whatever the main behavior is right now, that could be gone. There might be a new behavior, but that one may be over, do you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, I had to work, and this program I thought Abby would go in, but it didn't work out because they cut the program. But then I had a girl move in my house, and I bartered. I had a spare room. And I put a bed in it. It was my little office, my little sanctuary, my one little space I had in the world. And I gave it up so that a girl could move in, and we bartered. So I'd go to work, they'd go to school, and she only had to work from, like, you know, 3 to 7, just those hours, and got to live for free in Los Angeles. Rents here are pretty expensive. So we just bartered, which I thought was a really good solution. And so somebody was always here. My poor son would be sometimes here at age, you know, 12, trying to do his math homework, and Abby would be having a tantrum of some kind, a real meltdown. And these are some of the most heartbreaking moments. And I'd be at work, and he would call me and crying and saying, Abby's having a meltdown. What do I do?
Oh, yeah, we know.
It's just what I'm saying. This is there, so not fair.
Right.
How is this happening? Maybe Tristan knows about that.
Gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? So yeah, and I'm so proud of Abby's brother for always being there, showing up, and you know, just accepting her, and just, you know, he was the man of the house. On top of everything else, he was the man of the house too. So he had to grow up real fast, you know, and he was just great. That's another whole part of the story, isn't
it? Trent also has a brother 2 years younger than him, and he's never known life without Trent. I mean, he'll say that, you know, like, I'm the only one who didn't live without Trent ever, you know. Tristan was just a year old when Trent was born, but so she doesn't remember either.
We had a podcast episode, I think in the first season, that it was just all the kids, Trevor and Tristan and TJ. And I think Easton, didn't you host that one? And that was like, we weren't allowed. It was probably a good thing we weren't here.
Yeah.
It was just the kids on, and they talked about what life was like. It was hard to listen to at times.
But it was good.
For us. But it was good. Yeah.
I mean, it's real.
Yeah.
I mean, it's life on life's terms, isn't it? I mean, there's other people with other completely different crises or situations that they, you know, have to deal with. I just want to say and I'm sure you guys too, it's like, don't give up, you know, one day at a time. And trust your instincts to what your kid needs. And for me, and I just did a video on this last night, which is how far Abby's come since age 18. She's 25 now. Her social skills are 100% more engaging, and that she's able to control her own interactions now in a way that she couldn't, because we've still worked on them. Yeah. And that's been my biggest thing. I've really pushed this adaptive life skills program, which is really targeted to her deficit areas. And I help with the therapist to create the goals of what that is, you know? So, yeah. So that's been the growth since 2020 has been tremendous.
Just the fact that she can come and sit and listen to have some interaction there, you know, the language for Trent he can't process that. Can't process the conversation, the language, and put it together in a way that makes sense. And so it's completely overwhelming for him, and he has to get out.
It is pretty funny though, because if you answer a question that he doesn't want to, that you know he can answer, but he doesn't want to take the time to do it, he'll say boff.
Yeah.
Which I don't know where the heck that came from.
What does he say?
He says boff.
Like
boff. When he doesn't want to,
When
he doesn't want to answer, he'll just say buff.
Yeah.
Even if he answered it before.
Yeah. Where'd you go for lunch today? I know he can answer that question.
Yeah.
Maybe not other where questions, probably not. But I know he can tell me where he ate lunch. But if he doesn't want to talk about it, if he's like watching a show, doesn't want to have to think to answer it, he just says boff.
But it's funny, he'll process it for about a half a second. You can tell he like thinks about it, and he's like, buff.
Yeah, not going to work.
I don't care.
I'm not going to work at getting that out.
I'm not interested.
Library file card.
He doesn't have the words to be like, I don't want to talk right now, you know,
yeah.
or like, I'm done. So he just says, boff. It's pretty funny.
But man, he can draw. So.
Yeah, right. Goodness. It's a great, such a great expression. You know, yeah. one of the things that I, as I say, I'm always trying to look for the key to the kingdom, which is Abby's mind. Mm-hmm. And it's been brought to my attention, this idea within speech of the Gestalt learning processor. Do you know what that is? Have you heard of it? Mm-mm. So it's in reference to a lot of language learners when they're younger, that they don't hear individual words. They hear chunks of words. That's why they do scripting and this delayed echolalia, which is repeating scripting, because they're hearing the whole phrase, not the individual words. I'm probably saying this wrong, so forgive me. I'll speak to the therapist that might be listening right now. But, so Abby did a lot of scripting and a lot of echolalia when she was younger. So that is true in terms of her learning. But I wouldn't say she, and sometimes it's related to the fact that at the time you did X, you heard the words blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. So now when you see that, you say those words, blah, blah, blah. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So there's a crossover with boss might be a word that he heard at some point when somebody was saying no. You know what I'm saying? So he's pulling it. He's pulling it from an old memory, actually. Uh-huh. So I always say Abby thinks in memories. Mm-hmm. But this Gestalt learning process or concept to me is relatively new. No one ever said a word to us in Abby's 25 years. Mm-hmm. Where am I learning it? On TikTok. Thank you, TikTok.
horrible TikTok.
The education channel.
The evil TikTok. But I've befriended a couple of people, an OT in particular, who's giving me some specific OT references. But a couple of the speech people I'm chatting with, you know, are sort of saying that this is a relatively newer concept within speech pathology. So it makes me see, so what is the connection to understanding that you heard the word Bubba at the time someone fell on the ground and it hurt. So now you say Bubba when you're in pain. Mm-hmm. If you're associating that word at the time you experienced that feeling.
Yeah.
And so that to me is a little bit of the key to the city, which is where parents come in and have to look for what that could possibly connect with. So I knew that Abby was connecting the clubhouse, not till she was older, with the feelings of I'm scared, I'm anxious. Mm-hmm. And so I drew this picture for her, and she still goes to a what I call default mode, a neurological default mode of that's the clubhouse. It is not normal for her to say, I'm in pain right now, or I'm scared. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm still through repetition trying to connect it for her. Mm-hmm. But that's the one part of, I think, the mystery of this. And as you all know, that autism in general, now more than ever, is a wild open field of 100 different things, and no one knows where to start, and no one knows when they're finished. Yeah. And that's what I don't like about the current state of affairs. You know, if you're getting treated for cancer, they come to you and they say, stage 4 prostate cancer, you're going to do this therapy, chemo, radiation, this, that, and then surgery. You know exactly what you're going to have to do. I wish there was a more concrete evaluative process so that people could get to those targeted areas. Gestalt should be now included in everything, you know, like there is something true. There is a crossover. And what I'm learning with Abby at 25, I don't think she hears the way I hear.
Right.
So I have started to talk to her like this, taking a pause in between each word to test her to see if it increases her understanding of language. Mm-hmm. As obnoxious as it is, folks.
Have you noticed a difference?
But because I'm understanding that when we sit here and we have conversations just like this on Zoom, she's tuning out.
Yeah.
And it's not that she's not paying attention. She can't hear what we're saying, and I'm thinking, okay, so she's hearing Charlie Brown wah 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 wah. Why is she hearing that? But if I break it down and I do a more one-on-one thing, she is hearing it. How can I expand on that? What is that connection? This is just me observing and being that detective. And so now I'm reaching out to these Gestalt processor people that I'm seeing, and I'm trying to think who deals with the hearing end of that, not mm-hmm. the expressive language, but the receptive language. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to target it that specifically to see if we can't help her with that auditory comprehension in a conversational setting.
Mm-hmm.
You wow. know? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty wild when yeah. you get into the sort of alternative, you know, brain processing, mm-hmm. but the field needs to expand and really, I think, subdivide and put people in like-minded skill sets so that you can treat and target.
So have you noticed a difference since you started talking to her in that way, of her understanding of what you're saying?
You know, a little bit. What I'm trying to do is now that she's 25, saying, is this helping you? Mm-hmm. And sometimes mm-hmm. she'll yes me, and I'm not really sure she got it. Mm-hmm. So I'm still testing yeah. it.
Has she yeah. stopped and said, why are you talking so slow? Has she, she's not commented no, no, on no. it at all. Huh. Good.
Nope.
Good.
It seems to me what it's like, if you're talking, we've trained her to say, what are you guys talking about? Mm-hmm. We have encouraged her to say, what are you guys talking about? Because we want her to say, it's okay to not know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're right. in the car. And then we'll do almost staged conversations so she can practice joining in those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Or suggest she picks the subject, so it's a preferred activity or interest, mm-hmm. like animals. So if she's picked it, it's preferred activity, we're going to get more connection automatically. I talk about that a lot in my videos, mm-hmm. which is preferred activities and creating gentle obstacles to wants mm-hmm. so that the person engages more with expressive language. A lot of people don't understand this. I posted a video on my TikTok. This was the craziest one. We'd ordered Chinese food. Abby loves her two dishes. And so I said, can I have some of your lo mein? And by the way, it's a big giant dish meant for three people. This is, these are not individual things. No, it's a big giant tray.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she didn't want to share with me. So I was using it as an opportunity to get more language out of her. I was like, oh, come on. Hey, sharing is caring, which is what David says on Love on the Spectrum. And then, you know, share your gummies, and she wouldn't do it. And mm-hmm. so it's just kind of a joke, really.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I did this. And what Abby did was, in the moment of my sort of eagerly waiting for her answer, can I have some? She said, no, nah, you can have the fried rice. So she picks up the fried rice and she offers it to me. Which is kind of a miracle
yeah.
because she was polite. She stood up for what she wanted and she came up with an alternative solution mm-hmm. so that I would have yeah, something.
Big. Yeah.
Nobody wants just the fried rice, but I'll take it.
Yeah.
Right.
And so yeah. the moral of that story was I created a slight obstacle so that I could get more language and engagement. And we had three mm-hmm. or four, you know, conversation circles in that exchange, posted it on TikTok, did a description. This was so great. I ask Abby if I can share. Da 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 da. Boom. It goes to 25 million views. And 50% of them are haters. Food shaming. Oh, look at this mother. She's trying to steal her daughter's food. Her daughter went and bought all this Chinese food. Look at this awful mother trying to steal the food from her. She's totally not following her daughter's boundaries. And like in the video, she's laughing at the end. I say, thanks.
Yeah.
I don't grab the yeah. food and run off. So it shows you that the audience on TikTok, limited attention span, they don't read the descriptions. They mm-hmm. don't care it's autism.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just have some projection of their own
mm-hmm.
boundary issues and they just dump. And it was so bad. People were duetting it. I had to pull it down. We shut down all our social media for 2 months and said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Wow.
I don't care about helping
oh,
people. That was one of those moments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Abby and I had gone to Indiana to visit Abby's brother, Ben, my son, Ben. And we were in an antique mall in Indianapolis. And a woman came up to me and she said, are you Abby's mom? So random.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. And she just said to me, you've helped me so much. I know my husband's on the spectrum. He's got these behaviors and I never know how to deal with it. And you've shared through Abby, like now I kind of get it. And I just told my girlfriend to follow you. And I said, that's funny. I just shut it all down. I said, there's just too many haters. It's just not worth my time. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, please don't do that. Don't do that. She yeah. said, there's so many more people that need to hear mm-hmm. these stories and this experience. And I left that antique store and I said, I didn't even get her name. I didn't even get her name.
Yeah.
But just that one moment in that antique mall in Indianapolis was why I said, you know what, darn it, I am going to do this.
Yeah.
And I went back on, and now I have a stronger skin and understanding of the profile of a hater. And I truly feel sorry for people that live in that much hate, that with that kind of ugliness, because karma comes around. You're probably going to be angry your whole life and be miserable. Look, and I'm saying this because I know what it's like to be pretty darn angry. Imagine me in my 40s, divorced, no money coming in, two kids, one's been diagnosed as moderately autistic in a pretty serious way, and a bad divorce. Like, I thought, this isn't my life.
Yeah.
I was jealous of everyone and all my friends who had great husbands and undiagnosed kids, because they were typical kids. And, you know, I lived in resentments for a couple of years. I was very angry. Why me? Why me? Why me? What did I do in a past life? You name it, I said it. And so I understand that the moment I decided, my spiritual awakening was, wait a minute, this is what is.
Yeah.
This is my life. I got a son. I have to get a job. At least I had a house. I didn't know how I was going to pay for a house because I had a mortgage now, because I didn't get any alimony. I got a little bit of child support at the beginning, and then that ran out. So there was some money problems. I had to rebuild my life at 40 under those circumstances with no marketable skills. It wasn't easy, and no support system. My parents were back east, and they really weren't involved in much of that at the time. Didn't really have close family members. I literally could only work mother's hours, because when the kids came home at that point, I had to be home. So it was just so much stuff. And I know what it's like to live in that angry place. And it's terrible. It's awful. But I woke up and said, you know what? Life, this is what is. I don't know why it's like this. And I'm going to accept it and move on. And it was at that point I started being more open that I had a daughter with autism. I was trying to date at the time, and I'd never tell a man that I was dating that I had an autistic daughter. I did the old, she has learning differences, which is total word for denial.
Right.
You know, I did all that. I pretended that, you know, I was like almost like two different people. I was the girl that went on the dates that got to have pretty hair and nice shoes. And then I was running around the house doing interventions with Abby and in therapeutic settings, which I resented. And I got to a point where I said, I can't do both. So I sort of stopped the dating thing. Like, I just can't do that. I can't be two different people. And I'm not ready to bring Abby into a situation where I have a boyfriend or something, you know? So I just sort of really started focusing on both my kids. Looking back on it, I was so glad I did, because one, I had the best high school times with my son and his friend group, because I know them all, because my son went to school from fourth to 12th grade. So I watched this group of boys grow up together. And then with being able to be really present for Abby and Abby's therapies and not be resentful of having to be 100% engaged in that. And then look at her now. Like, I got to, I'm a big traveler. I've traveled all over the world. There's still a lot of places I haven't hit. I was an exchange student in England in my college days, and traveling is everything to me. So I never traveled on any real big trips since Abby was born. So to be able to go on an African safari because of Abby.
Amazing.
That's a whole backstory people don't get. Like, I haven't really shared about it, but it was magical, spiritual. It was almost as if, I always say this, folks, my story with Abby gives new meaning to the term, wait for it.
Right.
Because, because what's happening now is, it makes everything kind of make sense that I've gone through, you know? And I'm so glad, and it's a happy time. You know, I have several of Abby's caregivers are some of my best friends, and they come over all the time now. They're like family. Season one of Bob of Love on the Spectrum, Bob and Mike are two of my best friends from the local elementary school. I've known them forever. They had two adopted sons, and they live in the house behind us. And they're like Abby's stepdads, kind of. And so they bring a lot of joy. And so we were sitting at the picnic table having our family dinner one summer about 4 years ago. And Bob or Mike said something about no one has the perfect family. And my son said, I do. And it, I was like, oh, yeah. Because he, of all people, did not. Right. He's like a good student. His mom is gone working all the time. He's got a sister on the spectrum and some random caregiver living in the back room of my house. His my two gay best friends that live in the back house who are, provide like stepdad vibe, which is fabulous. Mm-hmm. And so it's just to hear him say that made me think, see, if you accept what is, it works. Mm-hmm. It's when you're angry at what is and you're fighting what is and you're denying what is that sometimes that energy turns bad and you're just, no matter what you do, you're going to be unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. All right. We can wrap up here. Does anybody have anything else? I guess also, Christine, if you want to plug all of your socials and everything you've got going on, that would be great.
Yes. Well, here's Miss Abby.
I just wanted to say bye.
Yeah. Thanks for being on for a little bit, Abby.
You're welcome.
We love you, Abby, and what you do.
We've got madebyabby.com for Abby merch and sayings and her hats.
Okay.
And then on Spotify, Abby Romeo will have some of her songs are up there now, but the categories will be coming out in about 2 weeks. And it will also be on her YouTube channel, which is Hats by Abby, but then at Abby Romeo on YouTube.
Okay.
So, and then I'm going to be still on my Instagram, Christine, Abby's mom. And on TikTok, it's Abby's Mom 17. And make sure you get the account with the big amount of followers because there's 35 fake accounts in my name right now.
Not ridiculous.
On TikTok, Abby, there's a woman on Facebook that's got a fake Abby page that's stolen all of our videos. Yeah. Her name is Clara Mitchell. It says it right there. And she's 50,000 followers and it's all stolen content.
Yeah.
We've got the lawyers to submit, but it takes months and months and months for these platforms to get on it. And
we need to get that information from you because we have someone that's actually called Drawing by Trend and they steal every one of our videos and they have over 50,000 followers.
And they're monetized now. They're running commercials on there.
They have ads on Reels.
On our videos.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I saw our ad on their Reel. Yeah. And I'm like, they're getting paid for that. That's ridiculous.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. That's unbelievable. So anyways, I wish there was a better way to handle that, but that's kind of where we're at. And thank you guys so much for having me on this. I think what you're doing is amazing. Trent's lucky to have you. I know what you guys, I know the deal. I know the drill. It's so wonderful to see you turn this into something so beautiful and to share his perspective.
Thank
you. It's great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Perfect. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for being on.
All right.
And we'll catch everybody next time on another episode of Use Up Pens.
Yes, awesome. All right, you guys. Thanks,
Christine.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye.
Right. Bye.
This has been a new episode of Use Up Pens. Thank you so much for listening. New episodes drop every other Wednesday. Make sure to check out our Patreon where we have exclusive merch, exclusive items, and Trent drawings. A bunch more content, as well as ad-free episodes, and then also a couple extra podcasts. If you like listening to our podcast, make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube. If you're listening on YouTube, and if you're listening on Spotify, make sure to rate and review us, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to podcasts. And then lastly, make sure to check out our store for all of Trent's art, and a bunch of other merch that all has Trent's art on it. So, thank you so much for supporting the Trent family, the Landreth Moore family, and see you next time.